Good evening. Our sages teach us that 30 days before the holiday, it's already high time to study the laws of the holiday. Because if you would wait till right before the holiday, we'll get caught off guard. There's a lot of things that need to be done before Pesach. And so I figured we'll take a little break from learning the parasha. We already took a break, right? Learning about Purim. We'll take a break and we'll learn about Pesach. And today we're going to study one of the most important aspects of the holiday of Passover, which is the mitzvah of eating matzah. This is one of the most important mitzvahs that we are commanded to do on Pesach. So how do we know that we have to eat matzah? Where did God command us to do so? God said so. Where did he say that? Right over here in the big book. So let's open up the Chumash that we have in front of us. We'll go to page 309. Sure, most of us are familiar with the story. The Jewish people were slaves in Egypt for 210 years. Finally, God Almighty decided it's time to take them out. He had promised Abraham. He had told him that the Jewish people would be strangers and they would be slaves in a foreign land. They will go through a lot of trouble, but ultimately I will redeem them. He appoints Moses as his messenger. Moses comes to Pharaoh, the king of Egypt at the time, and gives him over a message from God, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh says, "Absolutely not." And God had foretold that he would resist, and he gives Moses 10 plagues through which God would inflict the Egyptians, and finally the 10th one would break them, and then they would allow the Jewish people to leave. So on page 309, 9 plagues have already occurred. Pharaoh tried to negotiate with Moses to allow some of the Jewish people to go, all of the Jewish people, but to leave the possessions and the animals. At any rate, Moses would take... was not negotiable, because God was not negotiable, and Pharaoh lost his patience, and he said, "Forget it, I will have nothing to do with you anymore." And so Moses warns him about the 10th plague, and he tells him that on the 15th of Nisan, at midnight, God will kill all the firstborn. Now, God, and after that, you will let us go. He's telling him that you are going to let us go, every single one of us. Now, God is preparing the Jewish people for the Exodus. So on page 309, chapter 12, so God speaks to Moses and he tells him the law of the Jewish calendar. And then he tells him how the Jewish people should prepare themselves for the evening of the 15th. They should take a lamb. On the 10th of Nisan, they should take a lamb and tie it to their bedpost. On a leash. You don't have to tie it to the bedpost itself, on a leash. And it was tied there. And they would have to check it for 4 days to be sure that there are no blemishes. And on the 14th, in the afternoon, they are to slaughter it. They are to take the blood and place the blood on the doorposts. They are to roast the lamb, and they are going to eat the lamb that night. Let's go to verse 8. Very good. Eat the sacrificial meat during the night, roasted over fire. Eat it with matzah and bitter herbs. So that means, on the eve of the 15th, before the Jewish people left Egypt, they were already having a Seder. Right? Just like today by our Seder, they have matzah, they have bitter herbs. Then as well, they had matzah and bitter herbs. Why were they eating matzah then?
Right.
That was my question.
Good question, huh? Because Hashem told them to, right here.
All right, exactly. Hashem told them to. Just because. Today, why do we eat matzah today by the Seder? Okay, but we give a reason for that. But the Torah says, when we left Egypt, we had no time to bake and we only had matzah. We'll get to that in a moment. But it's interesting to note, and this is something that many people are not mindful of. The Jewish people, before they left Egypt, the first Seder night, which by the way, the Seder really focuses around the Paschal Lamb. The main mitzvah of the eve of the Seder, of the night of the Seder, is the Paschal Lamb. But today we cannot do the Paschal Lamb because that needs to be done in the Holy Temple. We don't have a Holy Temple now, etc. In Egypt, they were told to bring a Paschal Lamb, and they were told to eat matzah and bitter herbs with that Paschal Lamb. All right.
No wine?
No wine. It doesn't say you should have wine. In fact, the Torah doesn't tell us you have to have wine on the night of the Seder. Wine is an injunction, is a mitzvah from the sages. Let us just continue on the next page. On page 311, verse 11. You must eat it with your waist belted, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you must eat it in haste. It is the Passover offering to God. Let's continue to verse 14. This day must be one that you will remember. You must keep it as a festival to God for all generations. It is a law for all time that you must celebrate it. Now, before we go further, I want to clarify something. The Jewish people celebrated Passover, the original Passover, in Egypt. There are two very important terms that we must be familiar with before we continue. Egyptian Passover and the Passover for generations. In other words, there was the Passover that our ancestors celebrated on the 15th of Nisan in the year 2448 from creation. And then there's the Passover for all subsequent years and generations. What is the difference between these Passovers? Many things. With regard to the Paschal Lamb, the lamb that they offered in Egypt was not done in a holy temple. It didn't exist, or in a tabernacle. In Egypt, they were told they should take the blood and put it on the doorposts of their homes. Subsequently, in all other years, you know, throughout all generations, they didn't put blood on the doorposts of their homes. The blood was sprinkled on the altar, not in your home, right? Also, the Passover that they celebrated in Egypt, they did not have the prohibition of eating chametz for 7 days. Right? They were told to eat matzah. The prohibition of chametz was either that night or the first day. But most agree that for all 7 days they weren't obligated not to eat chametz. Let alone, they were allowed to own chametz. They weren't told beforehand that they should get rid of all their bread or any leaven that they have. They were just told. One second. Now, verse 14 tells us that you are going to celebrate Passover for all generations. This day must be one that you will remember. Let's go to 15. So what should you do for all generations? Eat matzahs for 7 days. By the first day, you must have your homes cleared of all leaven. By the way, the first day does not mean the 15th of the month. It means the 14th of the month. First over here means the day before. We won't get into the details of how we got to that. But on the 14th, by midday, we have to clean out our homes must be cleared of all leaven. This did not apply in Egypt. This did not apply in the original Passover. This only applies in all subsequent years. Not only must your house be cleared of leaven, whoever eats leaven from the first day until the seventh day will have his soul cut off from Israel. It's called karet, which means a spiritual death. And in fact, in biblical and temple times, when our physical and spiritual realities were more in line with each other, if someone was punished with spiritual death, that resulted in premature physical death. You would die by the age of 50 or 60. That doesn't mean any person that died before the age of 50 or 60 had a spiritual death. But if someone had violated a prohibition, that the punishment for it was karet, which means being cut off, it's not a physical cutoff, it's a spiritual cutoff. So at the time when these realities were more in sync, it would have an effect on the person's physical life as well. The first day shall be a sacred holiday, and the seventh day shall also be a sacred holiday. No work may be done on these days. The only work that you may do is that which is needed so that everyone will be able to eat. Okay. Verse 17. These are very important verses here. In the Hebrew, it reads as follows. Ushmartem et hamatzot. Be careful regarding the matzahs. For on this day, and on this very day, I will have brought your masses out of Egypt. You must carefully keep this day for all generations. It is a law for all times. From the 14th day of the first month in the evening until the night of the 21st day of the month, you must eat only matzahs. During these 7 days, no leaven may be found in your homes. If someone eats anything leavened, his soul shall be cut off from the community of Israel. This is true whether he is a proselyte or a person born into the nation. You must not eat anything leavened. In all the areas where you live, eat matzahs. Okay.
What was the manna considered, or was it different?
Manna is food from heaven. It didn't have any of these. How could it be chametz? We'll talk about chametz in a minute. What is chametz and what is matzah?
Well, yes. That paragraph we just read is for the future.
Yes.
Not for
then. Correct. Some of it applied for then, which we'll point out soon, but essentially this applied for the future. That for 7 days, they're not allowed to own any chametz, not allowed to eat chametz. If you want to eat any type of bread, it's got to be matzah. Okay.
How did this story come about? And that matzah was because of the unleavened bread that they ran.
Oh, very good. John is asking a good question.
Number 34.
Oh, 1 second. No, don't worry. No, it's good you asked the question. I'm happy that you asked it. Very good. 1 second.
What was the question?
Her question was, anyone that was ever by a Seder has heard the following story. Why are we eating the matzah? Because when our ancestors were left Egypt, they left in a haste, and they couldn't allow the matzah to rise, and so therefore it wasn't able to rise, and they baked it, and it was matzah, so we are eating matzah to commemorate that miracle. Very good. Good question. So let's go. Page 315. Page 315, verse 39. Now, in between these few pages, basically the Jewish people did everything that Moses told them to do. They prepared the Paschal lamb, they ate the matzah and the bitter herbs. As the clock struck midnight, God killed all the firstborn. There was a terrible outcry in the land of Egypt. Pharaoh woke up in his bed in his pajamas. He was running to Moses. He sent them out. Okay. Now the Torah tells us in verse 39. The Israelites baked the dough that... I'm sorry. No. I'm sorry. Let's go back.
34.
Sorry. Yeah, verse 34. Yeah, very good. The people took their dough before it could rise. The leftover dough was wrapped in their robes and placed on their shoulders. All right. What's going on here? Was it new dough? Was it leftover dough? What is this? Let's read the Hebrew in 34. They took bitseiko terem yechmatz. They took their dough before it became chametz, and then misharotam, the leftovers, they also took with them as well. So they just tell us like this, that the Jewish people had leftover matzah from the night before. They were told that the meat of the Paschal lamb must be finished by morning. If you leave it over, it's not good. You're violating a command. But the matzah, they didn't finish the matzah. So the Jewish people, as they were getting ready to leave, Pharaoh woke up and he's sending them out. So first of all, you're going out to a trip. What do? You bake bread, right? So they put, you should, right? So they put together their doughs, but the Egyptians were sending them out. Get out of here. So they took that dough, which didn't yet have a chance to rise, and they ran with it. In addition to that dough, they took the leftover matzah that they had from the night before. The sages tell us that they loved this matzah. It was the first mitzvah that they had, really. One of the first mitzvahs. And it was a good mitzvah, right? You eat it, right? You don't have to, it's not like circumcision or any tough mitzvah. And that was also one of the mitzvahs they got. All the men had to circumcise themselves before they could have the Paschal lamb. So here they took this matzah, which was mitzvah matzah, and they took it with them. So they had two bundles with them. They had leftover matzah from the night before, and they had dough, which had not yet had a chance to rise. All right, so they leave, and they start going towards Sukkot, which is on the outskirts of the land of Egypt. Come to verse 39. The Israelites baked the dough that they had brought out of Egypt into unleavened matzah cakes, since it had not risen. They had been driven out of Egypt and could not delay, and they had not prepared any other provisions. All right. There's a few questions here. First of all, it seems, or it's very clear, that the Jewish people, you know how many Jews left Egypt?
Males
between 20 and 60. Well, I would say approximately 3 million, right? Each one of them was married, so you have 600,000 women in that age, and then you have children, you have elderly. You're talking over 2 million, definitely, probably 3 million people. You ever tried to get your family out the door? How long does it take? You can probably bake two batches of challah in that time, right? You can probably put together enough... Just to get your family out the front door. Forget about moving your house. That takes 2 months, right? Okay, so the Jewish people weren't taking their household possessions. By the way, the Jewish people were taking a lot of stuff. But amazingly, miraculously, millions of people uprooted themselves from their homes. They were not allowed to leave their home until daybreak. and they started to bake provisions to go. By the time this entire camp, this entire group of 3 million people made it to Sukkot, they had to bake the dough that they had, and it had not yet risen during that time. That should tell you something about how quickly the Exodus occurred. Now, it was definitely miraculous. It was nothing natural about it. However, it says something interesting. It says that they left in haste because the Egyptians were pushing them out. Hold it. The Egyptians were in control? The Egyptians had been beaten. They were desperate to get them out. Imagine someone's desperate to get you out of the house, and he has the lower hand. So what are you going to tell them? I'll take my time, my friend. You didn't let me go till now. Give me some time to pack up and to prepare some sandwiches, and then I'll leave at my convenience, right? Usually if you have the upper hand, it's up to your convenience. Over here, it seems that the Jewish people were put into a very inconvenient position. They weren't able to prepare all their food. They had no other provisions to go with them, and they're running with this dough. Who runs with dough? You make a dough, you put it into the oven, you bake it, and you go. They only baked it after they all got to Sukkot, and by then it was still not chametz, it was matzah. All right. These are just questions that we're going to get to the answers, but... Okay. Okay, let's... I love questions.
Okay. If the matzah that they ate in Egypt, we would, I guess, assume that they had to eat it before if they knew how to make it. And then it obviously rose. It obviously was not flatbread like we know it, the flattened product like we know. So the old matzah would have risen, but this time it didn't.
The old, in other words, like this. Okay, so let's talk about chametz and matzah, what that is, and then we'll get to the answer to your question. What is chametz?
Leaven.
Okay, what is that?
Leaven.
Okay. Chametz is specific. I mean, the reason I don't want to use the word leaven is because, you know, some chemists might come and say that leaven could be out of other things. So we're talking specifically here about chametz. The Torah, biblical definition of chametz, which is not allowed to be eaten on Pesach. You'll see in the handout that I gave you, on the bottom, it enumerates the five grains. Wheat, barley, oat, rye, and spelt. If any of these five grains, when they come in contact with water, after a certain amount of time, sooner or later, a chemical reaction called chimutz.
Is it germination chemical?
Called fermentation, germination, whatever, rising, whatever it is. I don't know exactly how to define it in English. But the chemical reaction that is determined as chametz begins to happen. If these five grains come in contact with water, if you have flour made out of anything else other than these five grains, for example, potato starch, you mix it with water, chametz does not occur. Rice flour, chametz doesn't occur. All right? So corn also, chametz does not occur. If you mix corn meal or whatever it is, cornmeal, with water, it doesn't happen. Another interesting fun fact. Chametz only happens if water comes in contact with these five grains. But wine, oil, eggs, anything else, any other type of liquid, if you mix them with this type of flour, chametz doesn't happen. All right? Now, you have to be sure that there is not even a little drop of water. So, you know, you can't just take juice from the fridge and pour it in. You never know what type of water is in there. But if you're sure that the flour never came in contact with water, and you are sure that this wine does not even have a drop of water in there, or you take eggs, you open up an egg, you put it in, you mix it, chametz will never occur with this dough. If a little bit of water was placed into it, not only will it become chametz, it will become chametz faster than if there was no egg in there. Right, so chemistry, right? Anyway, so these are very important things to know. Chametz only occurs with these five grains, flour from these five grains, with these five grains, and only if water is in touch with them. And the other type of liquid does not cause chametz. Okay. So now we have determined what chametz is. What is matzah? Anything that's not chametz? So if I take a potato and I cut it, is that matzah?
What is five grains with right. Without water?
With water, there's nothing.
It's one of the five grains that have not been allowed to become chametz.
Oh, okay, so one second. So you just said two different things. You said the grains that are in contact with anything else other than water. And you said it has to be in touch with water, but you have to be careful that it didn't become chametz. Okay, so there's another area of the Torah that discusses at length the mitzvah of matzah. This mitzvah, the what we just read was the mitzvah that was communicated to Moses, to the Jewish people, by God, communicated by God to the Jewish people through Moses while they were still in Egypt. And it's recorded during the story. In Deuteronomy, in Dvarim, in Parashat Re'eh, in the handout you have it here, I don't want you to go flipping back and forth in the Chumash. So there is another very long paragraph with regard to Pesach. Let's just read through it quickly so we have a general picture. Keep the month of spring and make the Passover offering to the Lord your God. For in the month of spring, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt at night. You shall slaughter the Passover sacrifice to the Lord your God of the flock and the festival sacrifices of the cattle in the place which the Lord will choose to establish his name therein. Basically, the Passover lamb must be offered and prepared. So it must be slaughtered and the blood must be offered specifically in the Holy Temple. You shall not eat leaven with it, no chametz. For 7 days you shall eat with it matzah, the bread of affliction. For in haste you went out of the land of Egypt, so that you shall remember the day when you went out of the land of Egypt all the days of your life. And no leaven shall be seen within with you within all your borders for 7 days, neither shall any of the flesh your... Let's skip to the second to last line. For 6 days you shall eat matzah, and on the seventh day there shall be a halt to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work on it. Okay, let me just tell you three very important things that we learn from this paragraph. It says on the fifth line, you shall not eat leaven with it. For 7 days you shall eat with it matzah. From the fact that chametz and matzah are right next to each other, it says don't eat chametz, only eat matzah, we learn that matzah is only considered matzah if it was made with a grain that could become chametz. So it must be made from flour from one of these five grains. In addition, only if it was made with water that could cause this mixture to become chametz. However, you have guarded it that it shouldn't become chametz. How do you do that? When a person is still involved with kneading the dough and working with the dough, it does not have time to start rising. It's not capable of rising. If you take a dough and you put it together and you do this for 24 hours, it's not chametz anymore. It's not chametz yet. If you let go of it and you let it sit there for approximately 18 minutes, then it becomes chametz. Okay?
There is a miracle that matzah left Egypt, became
So what was the miracle? That it was able to sit there for a few hours and not become chametz, or perhaps they all left within 10 minutes. It's possible. Or there's another way you could understand it, and you could say that, hey, these people, they were going with the dough and it was on their backs, and you know, when you're carrying something on your back, it's constantly moving back and forth, so perhaps it didn't become chametz yet. Whichever way you're going to learn it, the fact of the matter is, matzah that could be used to do the mitzvah of matzah must be made from grain that could become chametz, and it must have water in it in order that that mixture could become chametz, but you guarded it and you made sure that it shouldn't become chametz. Are you allowed to put some eggs in the matzah and do the mitzvah? Why not? If there's water in there, this mixture could become chametz. Why should this not be legitimate matzah that could be used at the Seder? So for this, we go further. The next words are the bread of affliction. Now, in the Hebrew, it says lechem oni. Oni means either affliction or also poverty. Poor bread. Unenriched bread. You ever wondered why matzah tastes like paper or cardboard? Why does it taste like cardboard?
Nothing.
Why shouldn't it? What did you put in there already? No eggs, no sugar, no oil, no nothing.
Yeah.
Right? You put flour and water together, there is no taste. The only reason why you can tell the difference between different matzahs is depending on the different types of woods that are used to heat up the oven. That could have an effect on the matzah, on the taste, so to speak. It could. But There's no taste to it. The Torah over here tells us that the matzah that we are going to eat for generations must be lechem oni. If you want to do the mitzvah of matzah on the night of the Seder, no eggs, no oil, no wine, no juice. That dough that you made the matzah from it can have only two ingredients. Flour and water. And that's it. So, if I have matzah that has egg in it, that has juice in it as well, is it chametz? It's not chametz. It's not chametz because I guarded it and I made sure that it shouldn't become chametz, right? There is a way, there is a method of making matzah that has stuff in it. And the fact of the matter is that today we are careful not to eat egg matzah and things like that, because when you put other things inside this mixture, it becomes chametz faster than if it doesn't have anything else besides for water. So if water and flour coming together would take 18 minutes to rise, if you put egg in it, the amount of time that it takes for it to rise is much shorter. And therefore, we have to be extremely careful. And eating chametz on Pesach is extremely dangerous, right? Because the punishment for it, the consequence is spiritual death. And so therefore, we're diabetics to chametz on Pesach. We want to keep away, far away from the idea that we're really allergic to chametz. So therefore, healthy adults should not eat egg matzah. Children or elderly, that the only thing they can eat is that, and they have to do it for whatever reason, they should ask a rabbi if they are allowed to do it. But typically, the accepted rule is that we should not eat egg matzah or anything like that during the holiday. However, chametz is specifically one of these five grains that has been mixed with water. Legitimate matzah that we can use today for the Seder needs to be made from flour of these five grains and water. And it's not allowed to have within it any other type of enriching agent, right? No type of sweetness or anything else other than water. When the Jewish people were in Egypt, were they allowed to have such a matzah? Now, before we go further, I'll just give these names, okay? Matzah that we have today by the Seder that has only flour and water is called lechem oni, which is regular matzah. Matzah that is made with matzah that's made with juice or wine and has no water in it is called matzah ashira. Ashir means rich. Enriched matzah. Now, if you only make it with wine or with juices, can it become chametz? No, it can't. It just doesn't happen. So you have two opposite sides. You have flour and water only, which that's lechem oni, that's the poor bread that we have at the Seder. On the other hand, you have flour and juices or wine or egg. That's called matzah ashira, rich matzah, enriched matzah. But by the way, it can never become chametz either, right? And then you have a middle ground. You take flour, and you put wine or juice, and you also put some water in it. What is the definition of this matzah? It's matzah ashira. It's enriched matzah, but it has the advantage that it could have become chametz. All right? Right, for whatever reason, because there's water in there, it could become chametz, and in fact, it could become chametz faster than the other matzah. All right. So we have three types of matzah: matzah with water, matzah with juice, and matzah with both. All right. The detail that the matzah that we have for the Seder must be poor. When was that introduced to the Jewish people? In Deuteronomy. 40 years later. And so the matzah that we have from then on must be poor man's bread. The matzah that the Jewish people ate in Egypt, did it need to be poor man's bread?
No.
It doesn't say it anywhere. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that it needs to be the poor man's bread. And therefore, it's very possible that when the Jewish people were in Egypt, the night of the Seder, as they were bringing the lamb, it's very possible that the matzah that they ate was able to have juice or wine. It could be enriched matzah. However, was not allowed to be 100% enriched matzah. In other words, it was not allowed to be the type of matzah that you take flour and juice and mix it and there's absolutely no water in there. Why not? Because this type of dough can never become chametz. And during the time when the Jewish people were in Egypt, they were told, Ushmartem et hamatzot, guard the matzah. Well, if you only mixed into it juice or wine or eggs, why do you have to guard it? What's going to happen to it? Nothing's going to happen to it. You leave it alone for 24 hours, nothing will happen to it. It might not be too fresh, but it's not chametz.
So the matzah that's made with juice or wine or eggs without water, that can be kosher for Pesach, you just can't use it for the Seder.
Correct. 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 Yeah. I'll clarify that even more. But so while the Jewish people were in Egypt, the type of matzah that they were allowed to have was matzah that was mixed with water, obviously, because it needed to have the possibility of becoming chametz. But you're able to mix into it eggs and salt and whatever you want to put into there to give it some taste. Now, the Torah tells us that we're not allowed to eat chametz for 7 days. And it says you should eat matzah. Are you obligated to eat matzah all 7 days of Passover? You are not obligated to eat it. Why not? Why not? Because at the bottom of this paragraph in Deuteronomy, it says, for 6 days you shall eat matzah. You should eat matzot for 6 days. What happened to the seventh day? So our sages learned that the seventh day, obviously, is not an obligation. And with a very specific method of understanding the Torah that was given to us through Moses, from the 13 methods that we have, they deducted that actually all 7 days you're not obligated to eat matzah. There's only one evening that you must have matzah, and that is the evening of the Seder. Because it says in a different verse, Ba'erev tochlu matzot, you must eat matzah on the evening of the Seder. In Israel, it's only one night. In the diaspora, it's two nights. So, another very important thing to clarify. We are only obligated to eat matzah on the night of the Seder. The rest of Pesach, you don't have to eat matzah per se. You're not allowed to eat chametz. If you want to have bread, it's got to be matzah.
Right.
Now, the fact of the matter is that let's say Shabbat happens in the middle of Pesach, right? So there's a mitzvah on Shabbat to have two breads, right? So you would be obligated to have matzah, but not because it's Pesach, not because of the mitzvah of matzah, but because in order to honor the Shabbat, you need to have two breads. You can't have challah, you can have matzah. But you're not going to make a blessing on the mitzvah of eating matzah. When we eat the matzah by the Seder, we make two blessings. We make the blessing of Hamotzi and the blessing of Al Achilat Matzah. God has commanded us to eat matzah. So the only time we are obligated to eat matzah is on the first night, on the Seder night. In Israel, it's one night. In the diaspora, it's two nights. In fact, there were many good Jews, definitely in the previous generation, it's possible even today, they still exist, that would only eat matzah by the Seder. Otherwise, they wouldn't eat matzah. You know why? Because matzah is the most combustible thing that you can eat on Pesach. That's so dangerous. Combustible, not it's going to blow up in your mouth. But if you're worried about chametz, the last thing you should be eating is matzah. Because it's possible that it wasn't done correct. I mean, you never know. You never know. I'll eat it by the Seder because God told me I must eat it. Okay, so I have to eat it. But if I'm truly worried about chametz, I don't want to even touch something that's possibly chametz. Now don't worry about it. If you eat matzah, you can enjoy it. It's fine. I eat matzah the rest of Pesach. There's no reason to specifically, you know, tremble in fear from the actual matzah. Don't worry about it. But I'm just pointing out that the obligation to eat matzah is only the night of the Seder, and the obligation is it must be matzah that is poor, that's not enriched. It does not have any other ingredients besides for flour and water. Yes.
So technically, if these are the only five grains that can become chumetz, and you said something about potato, and Ashkenazi, we eat potato, right?
Correct, yeah.
You could actually make like a potato bread?
Definitely. Oh, potato cakes. What?
Oh, not corn, huh?
No, I just asked about corn. So corn is a different issue. There's Ashkenazi Jews, there's a prohibition of kitniyot, which means anything that... There are very specific definitions, like, for example, corn, beans, rice. Right? You've already heard of the big divide between the Jewish people. Sephardim eat rice on Passover, Ashkenazim don't. Right? So that's all part of the... It's not chametz. A Sephardi that eats rice on Pesach is not eating chametz. Heaven forbid. You never say that he's eating chametz. But an Ashkenazi is not allowed to eat rice. The reasons for that, it's not that I don't want to get distracted by this class. For the reasons of kidneyot, we are focusing on chametz and matzah. But yes, indeed, if someone wants to make a cake out of potato starch, it's perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. Personally, I don't use potato starch. That's our custom not to use. So, but someone that doesn't have all of these restrictions of customs, you go into New York, into the bakeries, they have matzah bakeries galore. They have some very good stuff, actually. They have cookies and cakes and pizzas and who knows what. And it's not matzah thing. It's the tasty, good stuff.
And it's not made with those grains.
It's not made with these grains, exactly. Exactly. Because all these five grains are actually legitimate to be used for matzah, if a person has allergies, you know, you can't have wheat. So you can get spelt matzah if you want. It's available. It's more expensive, but just like you go and get more expensive type of bread in order to be able to eat it because you have allergies, you could do the same thing with matzah as well.
So you can't really make your own matzah because you weren't able to wash the grain, so you don't know if the grain is...
Yeah, don't do matzah on your own. There are many reasons for that. In fact, let's talk about this for briefly. Was matzah always flat and crunchy? You weren't there, right? The answer is no. The original matzah was not flat and crunchy. In fact, the flat and crunchy matzah was introduced to the Jewish nation about less than 300 years ago. Yeah. Flat, crunchy matzah was introduced about 300 years ago. So many phone calls in the middle of the class.
Flour in your house for a Betty Kahneman?
Well, one second. Oh, flour is a problem. Flour, don't have flour in your house. On Pesach, you're not allowed to have flour in your house. Because that flour, you never know. It could be there's some moisture or whatever. That could be. The flat, crunchy matzah started about 250, 300 years ago. Why? Many reasons, but here are some of them. Here are some of them. Originally, you know, before 300 years ago, most people had their own private matzah oven, right? They would go together as a community or as different groups, and they would harvest the wheat, and they would go to the mill, and they would have groups that would, you know, they would guard the wheat and the kernels, and they would make sure that the flour was okay, and they would take care of it, and they would bring it to their house. In fact, many Jewish people, this was all done in the summer, right? That's when you harvest the wheat. So they would have these bags of flour hanging in their house in a place where the rats can't get to it, and no one will touch it. This is the matzah flour. And then as they got closer to Pesach, they would take either their original oven or a new oven that they had and was koshered for Pesach, and they would... You know, all together they would get the special water, which is a whole different discussion, what type of water you could use. They would prepare the water and the flour, and the entire family would get around the table. They would put it together. In fact, many people would do this on the night of Pesach, right before the Seder. They would get together on the holiday. If it's not Shabbat, if it's just a holiday, you could bake. They would bake the matzah when they came home from the synagogue. They wouldn't sit down for the Seder yet. They would bake the matzah. They would put the flour, the water, make a dough, and they would bake it in their ovens. And when done right, they could actually be quite soft, quite thick, like a cake. Or like you know, these big pita breads or whatever it is. When done right, and you're sure that it's not chametz, but to do that takes a lot of effort. You must be extremely careful. You have to be sure that everything is, all the levels, every part of it is baked perfectly well. If you crunch in the middle and you see that it's still raw, you got a real problem on your hands. You just ate chametz. Not just that. If you mess up on the dough, and that dough becomes chametz before you had a chance to bake it, guess what you just did? You just made chametz in your possession during Passover, which is spiritual death. Pretty bad, right? So, about 300 years ago, a group of great scholars got together and developed this new method of baking matzah. The advantages of this matzah is like this. First of all, when you put it into because it's so thin, you put it into the oven and it bakes, you're not worried that in the middle it's not baked. It's baked, it's a cracker, boom, that's it. So you don't have to worry that you know that some part of that matzah is becoming chametz after it came out of the oven. Second of all, it has a longer shelf life. How does your bread or cake taste 7 days later? Pretty terrible. Even the next day, no, worse than matzah. And the next day, it's not either good. So if you want to be able to prepare matzah well in advance before Pesach, so you don't get into trouble with actually making chametz on Pesach, and you're able to have a bakery that takes care of all the matzah, not all people have to bake their own matzah in their own home, which is extremely difficult and it takes a lot of effort, etc. So they developed this type of matzah, so it's flat, it's crunchy, and you have nothing to worry about, and it could last you for even over a year. This matzah will last you. All right, so that's just some fun facts about matzah. You might find, till today, there are some Yemenite communities and other Sephardic communities that they make their own matzah, and they make it like these little baguette, like little pitas, the pita bread, and it's actually very easy to eat. The matzah that we have today is not very easy to eat, but we do it, it's actually to our convenience, in order to allow us to make it bulk, to prepare it beforehand, and to make enough for the entire community. And that's why we're able to commercialize the matzah production, because we make such matzah. Let's get back to the discussion with regard to enriched matzah, not enriched matzah. While the Jewish people were in Egypt, that original Seder, the matzah that they ate, was allowed to be enriched matzah. It needed to be from these five grains. You needed to have water in there in order to give it the opportunity to rise, if you don't guard it. But technically, they were allowed to put in eggs or wine or juices. If they did or not, I don't know. But they were allowed to. Afterwards, when we celebrate Passover throughout the rest of the generations, if you want to do the mitzvah of matzah on the night of the Seder, it cannot have any type of ingredients that would enrich the taste. It can only have water. And the question is, why? In fact, we'll make the question even stronger. Look at the Haggadah. I have a quote from the Haggadah. Right? Towards the end of the story of the Exodus, we take the matzah and we say, this matzah that we eat, for what reason? Because the dough of our fathers did not have time to become leavened before the King of Kings of Kings. That was probably redundant. Okay, the Holy One, blessed be He, revealed Himself to them and redeemed them. Thus it is said, they baked matzah cakes from the dough that they had brought out of Egypt because it was leavened. For they had been For they had been driven out of Egypt and could not delay, and they had also not prepared any other provisions. So the matzah we're eating today is to commemorate the matzah they ate then. The matzah that they ate then, was it poor man's bread? Possibly not. So why is the matzah that we eat today, why does that need to be poor man's bread? Fair question. So let's get to the answers.
Because they didn't have time to eat it.
Remind us of the word and remember the bitterness.
It doesn't say that. Maror is to remind us of the bitterness of the slavery, right? But matzah is not to remind us of slavery. In fact, just the opposite. During the Seder, we're obligated to lean on our left side when we drink the wine. Anything that commemorates redemption, we have to lean on the left side, like all rich people do, right? Right? Everyone leans on the left side. You know, talking about in the good old days, they would recline on couches. So we're obligated to lean on our left in comfort to drink the wine, which celebrates redemption. And when we eat matzah, when you eat maror, you're not allowed to be on your left side. In fact, you have to sit up straight and eat the maror. Why? We're not celebrating nothing with eating that maror. We're actually remembering slavery. We're remembering bitterness. But when we eat matzah, we're not remembering any aspect of the slavery. We are remembering redemption. We are commemorating the fact that the Jewish people were thrown out of Egypt so quickly they couldn't even allow their dough to rise. Now, when you're going to get to the Seder, you'll have a question on me. Why? Because the first thing you are going to announce, even before the child starts asking the four questions, is, Hey Lach Ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread that our ancestors ate in Egypt. I didn't want to mention it because it would distract from the class, but I know that you'll have that question. Say, hey, Rabbi Levi forgot to read the Haggadah, and In fact, because of this line in the Haggadah, there are those that maintain, and I'm sure you've heard this concept, that in the times when there were slaves, so their taskmasters would feed them only matzah, because it takes a lot of time for that matzah to digest, so that would keep them full a little bit longer. That was the slave man's bread. The problem with that explanation is that we find no inkling of this idea anywhere in Scripture, anywhere in the Talmud. The first time it came in Jewish literature, from a legitimate, you know, Jewish theologian and scholar, it was the Ibn Ezra. But it only started about 600 years ago. And the Maharal of Prague, he basically says, I see no basis for this explanation. So what do you make of that line of the Haggadah? There's an explanation for that, but we won't talk about that now. So, I am aware of that line of the Haggadah, and even though there is that line of the Haggadah, I'm telling you clearly that the matzah that we eat today on the night of the Pesach has nothing to do with slavery. In fact, it only has to do with redemption. However, it must be poor man's bread. My question is, well, if we're celebrating redemption, why does it need to be poor? Why not have enriched and good tasting bread? Especially because at the redemption, in the year 2448, possibly, they had enriched matzah. They were allowed to have it, right? So, in order to understand this, we need to get into a bit of the Kabbalah of matzah. What is the spiritual significance of matzah? What is the spiritual significance of chametz? Well, what is chametz? You put wine, flour and water together. You have this little dough. You have a pound of flour, right? And you mix it with water. And you have this little dough that's this big, right? You come back an hour later. What happened to this little dough?
Big dough.
The big dough, right? Are there 2 pounds of flour in there?
No, there's air.
Air. It's nothing. It's emptiness. It's fluff, right? Chametz represents the ego. What is the ego? Emptiness. It's fluff. Which that leads to selfishness. There's nothing more empty than selfishness. Self-absorption. That's chametz. What's matzah? Matzah means we did not allow it to become chametz. By the way, matzah must be from something that could become chametz. Angels have no connection to matzah. Angels don't have egos. Angels can't become ego-driven. They're angels. They're robots. They're stuck. So matzah is made of material that could become egotistic, self-absorbed, and we work on it and battle with it to be sure that we do not give in to those self-absorbed, these selfish inklings, these self, our drives that are selfish, right? That's matzah. What is enriched matzah and what is poor matzah? Both of them are good, right? Both of them, you're not giving in to the ego. Both of them, you're not allowing yourself to be self-absorbed. Both of them, you're focused on God and not on yourself. What is the difference between the poor matzah and the enriched matzah? Enriched matzah means that you have pleasure from your service of God. You're enjoying your Judaism. Your senses are filled with Judaism. It's so rich and it's so exciting and you love what you're doing. Unbelievable. What's the poor matzah? I don't know why I'm doing this. In fact, I don't really want to do this, but I'm surrendering to God. Although my heart and mind are not here, although I don't really derive pleasure from what I'm doing, if God said so, I will do so. God said, don't eat chametz today, I won't. It's a pain in the neck. But God said so, right? God said that I can't mix milk and meat. Fine. Don't know why, but okay, right? I think I've mentioned this story before, but my great uncle, Rabbi Posner, he was once giving a talk to a group of college students about the mitzvah of tefillin. And he was explaining the rich idea of tefillin and how, whatever. He gave an hour and a half talk about tefillin. And after the talk, the place was silent and everyone was so inspired about this mitzvah. And one student raises his hand and says, Rabbi, every morning when you put on tefillin, you think about all that? He says, nah, I just put it on. I wake up in the morning, I'm in a rush, I'll put on the tefillin. God said so, right? So both of them are noble. Both of them, you are focused on serving God and not serving yourself. The difference is that the rich matzah means that you are engaged and you have pleasure from serving God. And the poor matzah is that you are submitting yourself to God. You have surrendered yourself to God. On the Seder night, why are we eating matzah? Because the Jewish people were driven out of Egypt. The Egyptians did not allow them to bake bread, normal bread, and they were rushed out of Egypt. Remember we asked in the beginning of the class, whoa, who was in control here? The Egyptians or the Jews? The Jews were in control. They could have told them, no, don't worry, we'll take our time. The truth of the matter is, though, it wasn't the Egyptians driving the Jews out of Egypt. The Jews were rushing out of Egypt. Why were they rushing out of Egypt? Before they changed their mind. Not before the Egyptians changed their mind, before the Jews changed their mind. When Moses came to the Jewish people and told them, hey, we're going to go out of Egypt, where are we going? Desert. Well, we're going to the desert. Wonderful. What's the ultimate goal? To the promised land, Israel. We don't even know what Israel is. We've been here for 200 years. We don't know what you're talking about. But okay. In fact, you'd say, well, they'd be desperate to get out of Egypt so they would get away from the slavery. Guess what? 6 months before the Exodus, the Jews weren't slaves anymore. From Rosh Hashanah, they were not doing back-breaking labor. Why? Because the third plague was the plague of lice. Basically, the entire earth of Egypt turned into lice. Most of the slavery was construction work. Can you do construction when the ground doesn't exist? They got 7 days off. Once they stopped working during that time, which was the Rosh Hashanah, they stopped to work. So for 6 months, they aren't slaves. They have the upper hand. The Egyptians are not controlling them. They can't leave. But Egypt was a great place to be. It was a very rich land. They were accustomed to the culture of Egypt. In fact, 80% of the people wanted to stay. They refused to leave, and God said, if you want to stay, you'll stay, but you're going to stay in the ground. And during the plague of darkness, 80% of the Jewish population died. And they were buried in Egypt. Only 20% were ready to leave. Even that 20% were on the verge of spiritual oblivion. They were in such a low spiritual state. They could have been lost forever. In fact, on the night of the Seder, Jews were mingling with the Egyptians. You'd think that the Jews would realize that the Egyptians are their enemies. They were inviting the Egyptians into their homes. They were visiting with other Egyptians in their homes. The spiritual state of the Jewish people was pretty bad. And therefore, when the hour came for redemption, they needed to leave immediately before they gave up, before they changed their mind. And so, in fact, it wasn't the Egyptians pushing them out. It was them running away from Egypt. In other words, they needed to surrender themselves to God. They needed to say, we don't understand what we're doing. We don't know why we're doing it. We don't even care for it, actually. We'd rather stay here. But we're running. In other words, the exodus from Egypt, the flight from Egypt, was a poor matzah-style type of serving God. It was the ultimate surrender. They had every reason to stay. They were safe. They were happy. But God said to leave, we're leaving. Where are we going? To the desert. We have food? No. Well, whatever. Let's go. And they ran. And that is the concept of Yetziat Mitzrayim, exodus from Egypt, that happens in every generation. As we say in the Haggadah, and it's a Mishnah, in every generation we must see ourselves as if we're leaving Egypt. The Alter Rebbe explains that, in fact, it's not just in every generation. On the night of Passover, every day we are leaving Egypt. We are constantly confronted with our inner Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim means limitations. We are constantly confronted by that inclination that wants to give itself, wants to indulge itself, wants to allow the ego to go unchecked. We're constantly battling it. What gives us the power to fight it? The fact that we are submitting ourselves to God, saying, look, we want to do this, but God said not to, so we won't. And that's why, at the night of the Seder, which is when we receive direction and inspiration to continue on the struggle throughout the year to overcome our inner Egypt, we have to have the poor matzah, the poor man's bread. But when the Jewish people were in Egypt on that first night, they were allowed to have, in addition, they were allowed to have enriched matzah. What does the enriched matzah represent? The excitement in Judaism, the pleasure in Judaism. In fact, that type of Judaism that don't worry about anything because the evil will not be there anymore. When will that happen? When Mashiach will come. The time of the redemption, at that point, our involvement with Judaism will be one of pleasure. We won't need to submit ourselves necessarily because there won't be any type of distraction. Nothing else will be exciting. Egotistic things will have been exposed. We will see that they are rotten, that they are worthless. We won't want them anymore. Then is going to be a reality of enriched matzah. But it was important to tell the Jewish people before they left Egypt the message of the enriched matzah for two reasons. One reason is, if you're constantly struggling, what gives you the momentum to keep up the struggle? When you know that ultimately you will not struggle anymore, ultimately your engagement in Judaism will be one of pleasure, that gives you the courage that you need to continue struggling. And more importantly, the fact that ultimately all of my physical senses will enjoy Judaism, that tells me that deep down, even today, when I may not be interested, when it may be a struggle to make sure to put on tefillin in the morning or to light Shabbat candles or to keep kosher or whatever it may be, when it may be a struggle, deep down I really want to do this. And deep down, this is the most pleasurable thing, not just to my soul, but to my body. And as long as I allow myself to learn the message of the poor man's bread, which is submission to God, and that I'll have the discipline to keep up the struggle as much as it takes, I will ultimately reach it, and I will ultimately experience that in a full reality when Mashiach will come. But the template for that, the vision of that, was introduced to the Jewish people at the very beginning. So, just to finish off, just to summarize everything that we've learned, the definition of matzah is specifically something that has been made from a grain that could become chametz, but you have guarded it from becoming chametz, which that means human beings that are capable of being driven by their egos and being selfish, they are the ones that God wants, that they should work with themselves, battle themselves, they should win the struggle of ensuring that they remain matzah, that they remain selfless and remain focused on God Almighty, and ultimately the experience of Judaism will be one of enriched matzah, which is exciting, pleasurable, and something that fills our senses and something that we are excited to do all the time. And may this coming Pesach be a kosher and happy Pesach, and may we very soon merit the coming of Mashiach when we will have the experience of the enriched matzah service of God. Amen.